Today's episode of the Oasis podcast is sponsored by Columbia Pins. Check out at Columbia Pins on Twitter and Instagram, and check out their website at columbiapins.bigcartel.com. They put together quality pin badges as well as other products like bucket hats and hoodies with the same designs, and they're really cool designs of some iconic Oasis moments, including Wembley, Don't Look Back in Anger, and Liam at Glastonbury. So really cool designs, great pin badges. Stick them on your jacket, stick them on your bag, and impress your friends. And they're amazing value as well. They're only £5, but if you use the code OASISPOD, it gets reduced to £4. That's an entire £1 saving. Come on. Keep listening after the main interview for the chance to win not just one badge, but the entire set of Columbia Pin badges. And thanks, Columbia Pins, for supporting the episode. On with the show.
All right, it's Liam. I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are okay. Really cool episode today for you, which is with Nick Egan. Nick is a music video director and he directed 6 Oasis videos, which is actually more than anyone else. He did the US versions of Supersonic and Live Forever, and he did all the videos from the Standing on the Shoulder of Giants album. Really cool, really interesting interview, some very interesting nuggets that we weren't aware of. And we will also be putting this video out on YouTube as well, because as well as this interesting interview, Nick has also sent me over a load of interesting paperwork related to his videos as well. So we will very shortly be having a YouTube video up with the interview with all that stuff in the background, so you can see all these very cool bits of behind the scenes drawings and paperwork relating to all the different videos. So that's really, really cool. And a few bits and pieces of that will be going up on Instagram and things. So keep your eyes peeled for that. As you heard at the start of the episode, today's episode is sponsored by Columbia Pins. Do stay listening after the interview for your chance to win a complete set of Columbia Pins pin badges, which is really, really cool. So it's only been a few days since we last put an episode out, but the big news is that Liam Gallagher has announced he's got a new single coming. It's called All You're Dreaming Of, and it's due out on the 27th of November on streaming and downloading and all that stuff. And then it's then going to be out on the 18th of December for all the vinyls and all that sort of stuff. There's loads of different vinyl options you can buy it. He's also made a video with Anthony Byrne, who's from the guy from Peaky Blinders, who did the One of Us video. So he was tweeting about that, how excited he was filming it. So that sounds really exciting. The artwork looks really cool. It's got sort of like a really interesting animated style. And also, all of the proceeds of this one are going to be going to Action for Children, which is an absolutely fantastic thing. Like, we were talking about the gig on the Thames, that, you know, it's a shame that, like, he was going to do the NHS free gig. Could they not do something for the NHS with this gig? But actually, all the proceeds for this going to Action for Children, like what sounds like it's going to be a big Christmas single, is a really lovely touch, actually. Fantastic stuff. We did get a little snippet of it. I mean, a very little snippet of it, but let's have a listen. So my reaction to that at first is I really love the horns and everything at the start. It just sort of conjures up, you know, it's very British, whether it's, that wonderful brass band sound. And then you get that piano coming right at the end, which just, it sounds very, very Beatlesy, very John Lennon, which, you know, you'd expect for like a big Liam Gallagher ballad. It's written by Simon Aldred, as well as co-written, I suppose, with Liam. And Simon Aldred's fantastic writer, has written some of Liam's best songs, as well as the Cherry Ghost stuff that he's done before, which is fantastic, and produced by Andrew Wyatt, who's produced so much of his stuff recently, and did that John Lennon cover that Liam guested on the other day. So I won't go into any much more detail than that right now, because I just recorded yesterday a Patreon discussion with Andy and Katie and Dan, who you have heard from before on here, and we were discussing that and the River Thames gig and a few other bits and pieces as well. So that will be coming to you very shortly. And and we arranged that on Discord. So if you are a patron of the Oasis podcast, you will have access now to Discord, which is sort of like an exclusive chat room where you can come in, you can discuss the latest episodes, you can just generally have a bit of a chat with other big fans of the Oasis podcast. And quite a few people are in there already, which is really, really cool. There's interesting stuff going on there all the time. So yes, if you are a patron already, then let me know and I will drop you a link over and we'll get you set up on Discord. And if you aren't a patron, then head to patreon.com/OasisPod and we will get you set up. Wonderful. All right. That's enough of my yakking. Let's move on to this interview with the legendary Nick Egan.
I went to art school in 1976, at a period I'd just seen David Bowie play at Wembley, and I went and I got a restricted view ticket, and I literally could only see him when he stepped in front of the stage and went back out again. As I left, I nearly got run over by his limousine, and something about it said to me, oh, that looks like a good job. And literally a week later, my friend Pete Barrow, who I went to high school with, said, oh, he told me about this band called the Sex Pistols. So we went to see them play at the 100 Club and then the Clash. And then I kind of became acquainted. Well, we were just cutting back before. It's the funny thing that got me into this, and I always think this is an important thing, was I used to play football when I was there. And I was playing football with this team called Great Northern I used to play with. And I was centre-half, and I was standing next to a friend of mine called Charlie Bryce. And he said to me, this is not you, because I was hanging out with a bunch of working class yobos, basically. Right. Going out getting into fights, and he turns to me and he said, this isn't you, is it? You should go to art school. It's just a weird thing to say when you're about to kick off in a football match, and that's what set me on my path. So anyway, having gone through punk and become involved with the Clash early on, and having done some singles covers with them, I got involved with Malcolm McLaren and Bow Wow Wow, and I worked with Bow Wow Wow, did the Bow Wow Wow cover for the Manet parody, and Dexys Midnight Runners, because Bernie Rhodes, who was the Clash's manager, that went on to manage Dexys, and I did that work with Culture Club, and then I moved to New York, because I found that when I'd run out of people to, I'd run out, it wasn't so much I'd run out of respect, but I got to where I'd got to, and I couldn't get any further in England, because, you know, they'd always tell you, they can always find someone just the next level down from you, so I felt like I needed to go and discover other things, and I was spending a lot of time in New York, because I was working with Malcolm McLaren, and got involved with the rap scene very early on, and because I put together that cover where I was going to clubs and seeing Grandmaster Flash and Afrika Bambaataa, and I did the cover for Duck Rock, which was sort of like a montage for all the whole hip hop scene in 19. And this is when people in Manhattan hadn't even heard of hip hop, so right. The world. And then McLaren came out with Buffalo Girls, which is the first kind of like successful rap song in Europe, and since been one of the most downloaded and sampled records ever. And then through him, I met Bob Dylan. I worked with Bob Dylan. I did a couple of things with Bob Dylan. I did the Psychedelic Furs, the Cult, and then I did In Excess, which is my other big group that I worked with, and Duran Duran, of course. So I would say, between Duran Duran and Oasis, it's probably, usually you do one or two videos for a group. They move on after that. But I did seven for Duran and six for Oasis. So, I've got to say that both groups, you know, I'm proud of what I've done with them. And culturally, on the same wavelength, you know, especially with Duran Duran. And just, you know, going on to, and I've designed album covers up until this point. I've done that big album cover design in 1982 or something, when MTV was just coming into the fore. Someone said to me, do you want to direct music videos? And I really wasn't interested, because to me they weren't a tangible thing. It was MTV, but an album cover, you could pick it up and look at it, and it was yours. Whereas MTV, it was all about whenever they decided you could see something, you could see something.
Right.
So I kind of resisted it, and I thought it was beneath me at the time, because I was an artist, and I didn't think it was. And then I did Iggy Pop, and I did his Blah 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 album cover. And then by this point, I'd been in Australia, worked with NXS, moved back, was coming back to New York, ended up stopping off in Los Angeles. And when I was in Los Angeles, again, the same lady, Lynn Healy, said to me, listen, if you want to do a video, Iggy Pop would like you to do the video for the song Blah Blah Blah, Real Wild Child, which is off of the Iggy Pop Blah 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 record that I did. So I said, okay, so I took it on, and I was working with some footage that had already been shot of him on stage. And I put it together, and I was thinking, wow, this is actually really kind of fun, because it's like, what it's music connected with images. And when when I was younger, I used to listen to T-Rex or the Rolling Stones or whatever with headphones on. And I'd lie there, and I'd have images coming in my head all the time. So it was a natural progression for me to do that. Well, I'm just out of school. Unfortunately, now we've taken that away from people by music videos, because there's not a single music video that you can't think of a successful band that there's a video that goes with it. So it's sort of taken away the public's imagination somewhat. And so I kind of got into that, but I did the Iggy Pop video, I did relatively well, but I was always in this kind of like, especially in America, where they didn't, what am I? Am I an album cover designer? Am I a video director? And it's like, and I wasn't doing so well trying to get videos, because I was so well known as this iconic album cover designer. So I'd done all these album covers that were like in the museums and everything.
Sure.
But I found it more of a struggle to get videos. And I was kind of like just moving along and just doing those little videos. And the person that, there were two things that happened. Kylie Minogue was the person that gave me my break. I'd met her through Michael Hutchins from NXS, because I'd been working with NXS, and they were going out with each other. So Kylie asked me to do a video for Step Back in Time, and she let me do what I want to do on it. We became kind of close. So she let me, I did her album cover as well, and she let me do what I want to do on it. And I did something different from what I'd been doing. I was trying to do videos for rock bands that were performing on stage, and just did performance videos, and I was getting really tired of that. And with Kylie, I had the opportunity to do something a little bit more church, and campy, and it was like based on the 70s, and I was just and from that I got a video for a group called the Soup Dragons, and that was nominated for an MTV award, and that sort of projected me up to the next level. When they got nominated, didn't win it. It was nominated Best Alternative Video the same year as Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, Pearl Jam, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. So it was going to be a tough win. So I didn't win it. Nirvana won it. But
fair enough.
and then I did the Duran Duran video for Ordinary World, which basically pushed me up into the A-list of directors once I'd done that, because it's such a huge video and it brought them back. And then I started to move from pop kind of things into alternative things. And I worked with Sonic Youth, did a video for Sonic Youth, and they loved my Kylie Minogue video, funny enough as well. But then I got to the point where I was becoming a director who could pick or choose what he wanted to do. You know, I was starting to get, all kinds of bands asking me to do videos, and I was becoming successful. And I remember I read an article in, I can't remember what it was. It was in somewhere. I was actually in Seattle, and they were playing in Seattle the same time I was up there, working on a video for a group called Candlebox. I didn't get to see them, but I read this article about them, never heard of them before. And that was 90, this must have been 94, late 93, I can't remember.
Okay.
And I said, and by this point, I'd moved to the biggest production company in the world called Propaganda Films, and I was with them. And I said to them, you know, I'd love to work with this band called Oasis. They sound great. So within a few days, I was told, yes, the band would like to meet you. They're playing at the Whiskey A Go-Go. You want to go and see them, and then we'll set up a dinner with them and the record label after you've seen them play. So I went to the Whiskey, and by the time I got there, it was over because Liam had walked off stage, and it all kind of fell into disarray. So I never even got to see them.
All right, LA, Whiskey A Go-Go, this is the spot. The best band in Britain. I say they're the best band in the universe. None other than Oasis.
Oasis! They love it.
Well, this one's called Rock and Roll Star.
Everyone was appalling. Every member of the crew, every member of the fucking band, because of crystal meth.
Phil Smith, our roadie, was responsible for putting the set lists out. For some reason, my set list was different to everybody else's.
They were all playing different songs at the same time. Whoa, what's going on here?
It was a shambles, man. It was an absolute fucking shambles.
See what I can for you, you know.
And the whole thing just fell apart.
But you know what? Being English and having gone through punk, I got all that. I thought, you know, because it wasn't contrived, nor was punk, you know. It was like the Pistols were on the Bill Grundy show. Nobody gets that now because they can't see the perspective of it. But going on the 6 o'clock... Like network show, like Bill Grundy was like a talk show at 6 o'clock, and saying fuck on there was the most outrageous thing it could ever be done, and it shocked people, and that's where punk went, and Oasis were very similar to that. They didn't give a shit, basically. So I remember going to meet them and have dinner with them, and they were kind of like off to the toilet every 5 minutes doing coke, and I knew they were. But then I just remember Liam was going, we didn't talk about the video at all, and Liam came up to me, he goes, you know, he goes, you can do whatever you want. He goes, we don't care, you can do whatever you want. He goes, but if it's shit, and he did the gesture about this cut throat, he drew his finger across his throat, it was crap, you know, like if I didn't get it right, that was it. And so, I went in to do, much lower budget than I was used to at this point. It was opposed to, I guess, the camera box for about $200,000 or something. This was about a $90,000 video because they already had a video for it. But the Americans didn't like the English video. I immediately had this idea because it's called, you know, Supersonic. And I had this, one of my favorite films was Nicholas Rhoades' film called The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie. And it's about where David Bowie comes from another planet and he lands in this, on Earth, and he kind of like, because Earth has water in it, and he's this English, skinny English guy with red hair, and he's in the middle America with a cowboy hats and everything, and they're looking at him, and I thought that's exactly what Oasis were like in America. They were these strange, almost strange aliens. They were so English, nobody got their sense of humor, what they were saying. And you know, I saw the way people, Americans, kind of stopped in their tracks, so they just didn't get, are these guys being serious? Or what they didn't care whether people knew they were doing drugs. They didn't care about, didn't even care about videos. They weren't like Duran Duran, who were like big on their videos and really were involved with it. Oasis didn't really seem to care that much about their videos. And so I wrote this idea, which is basically like as if they'd landed from this other planet on Earth. That's where you see all the stuff in the beginning of the,
yeah,
walking along the pits, and then the the spaceship, which they similar sort of thing is in. They had them playing, which is almost identical to the one in A Man Across the Earth when Bo is inside the, and it's on the cover Station to Station. Yeah, he's in that sort of circular dome. Yeah. And that was the space. So I had them like that. I had them in these kind of like characters all walking in this, and then the mad dinosaurs, you know, these people, these guys from Manchester, two worlds colliding, that's what it was meant to be. And that really was them, you know, I mean, it was a metaphor for who they were, and I had a great time doing it with them. I mean, they were doing a lot of drugs, I mean, there's no doubt about that. They were doing it, that the scene of them in the limousine,
yeah,
of them and Noel in his hand has a big, like, bag of coke that's out of shot, and every time between takes, they would do a big snort of it, and then we'd start filming again. You need to find a way for what you want to say, but before tomorrow, as my friend said, take you home, sits in a car all alone. He lives under a waterfall. Nobody can see him. Nobody can ever hear him call. Nobody can ever hear him call. But you know, they first of all, they made me laugh, and they were very, yeah, you cockney, you fucking cockney, you know, keep calling me a fucking cockney all the time, and I didn't take offence by that. So it's funny, we talked about football, and then Manchester City supporters. I'm a Chelsea fan, so it's kind of like we had a sort of dialogue that went on, but making, you know, we are as English, we like to take the piss,
yeah,
out of everyone.
Yeah.
And that's what we did, and it was all done in a really, you know, it was never ugly. And so I kind of, and I think they got to see that I respected them and what they were doing. And I did find it very strange with Liam, though. I had never worked with a front man that was so static, and kind of not getting the idea that, okay, you don't always have to look in the camera. This camera is from here, but you're performing to this camera. He never kind of got it. So if you put the camera in, he would look up at it. And if I put it down low, he would crouch down and look at it. Which, in a way, is sort of genius, in a way. Because he went completely the opposite way of what the traditional sense of performing to a camera meant. But also, he was so magnetic in a way, the way he was static. So anyway, so we got through that. There was one scene that I really enjoyed with Noel. Again in A Man Across the Earth, Bowie's in his hotel and he keeps getting his TVs and he keeps adding to TVs, and he's got about 20 of these TVs and they're all playing different things, and he's sitting in this chair and he's watching them all because he's this alien from this other culture. So I did that with Liam in a hotel room. I got all these TVs, but I put football on them.
Yeah.
All these football matches on them. And we were just, me and him sat there, we were talking about, and I gave him the camera, I had a stills camera that I could shoot on a motor drive, so you could get like about 12 frames per second. So I gave him the camera to take pictures, so he took some of the pictures from that video. But we talked about 1970s footballers and the Man City team and Leeds and Chelsea, and we had a great conversation, and I really got to like and love the band. This was version one of the band still.
Sure.
And then everyone else did the video. The video got onto MTV, and that was basically that on Supersonic. So, any questions you have about that shoot?
Yeah. No. So it's as I say, I really enjoyed the video. It is interesting. Like going back to what you said about the Americans, when you say the Americans didn't like the UK version, who's the Americans? Is that MTV or is that like Epic. Sony?
No, it was Epic Records.
Epic, okay.
It was a label in the US, yeah.
All right, fair enough.
It came from the president and the marketing. Yeah, back in those days, I mean, MTV was, you were around really towards the, you got the best part, I think your age, when you were, say, 14 or 15, you got the best part of MTV, the mid to late 90s, was undoubtedly their finest moment, and And it was a bit like we had in England the Top of the Pops, where everybody on the Thursday night in the whole country watched Top of the Pops. MTV was on in every fucking house you went to. So it gave everyone a focus, so it became really important. And if you got on MTV, you had a really good chance to make it. Now that's all been dissipated, so it's all over the place. So there's no central thing you can go to. It's scattered everywhere. So the sort of national focus is gone, but the national focus then was all on MTV. So everybody could have a conversation. Everyone knew what was going on. You could walk in the house, you could see a video. And I was hitting that moment just at the right time for me, for my success. And I was beginning to make bands successful. If I did a video for a band, the chance was that they were going to be successful. And they saw that, and they thought, well, we need to bring him in because he's English and he understands them and he understands the American market. And they didn't know, I don't think they had a clue what the video was about. But there was a David Bowie reference and Manifold's To Earth references was probably way over there. So it was definitely way over Oasis' head. I mean, Liam never felt comfortable in anything he did unless he was performing. And I got him to lie down on that bench, which is what Bowie does in Manifold's To Earth. And Bowie's lying on his bench until this woman opens his shop where he sells his ring. You should watch the film. Now you've seen the video, you should watch the film because you'll see every single part of that is part of that Oasis video.
You know what, I know that film, Nick. I've never put that together at all, so that is a great shout. I've never put the two together. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and I've never been, you know, I've never been one to say, hey, listen, I always said it was from The Man Who Fell to Earth, and I love that film. It's one of my favourite films, and Nicholas Rogue is the director. I loved, and that comes into the next video, because I carried on to the next video, but they kind of got, they knew that I knew about film, they knew about music, and I knew how to put two things together, and they really put their trust in me, and I never had a problem with them on any of the edits, really, you know. Mm. I mean, the funny thing about Noel is, and it kind of pisses me off a little bit, he slags every video off.
Yeah.
I think he just does it, just to do it, because I know that he's not like that, because I know, and this is later on, Who Feels Love, he loved that video, and they love that video, because it took them out. But I've never seen him say a good word about a video.
No.
He always makes fun of him.
And
I just think that's part of his image. But it sort of does piss you off a little bit, because it makes you feel like, well, what did I do? Yeah, I did all this work for them and helped them get to where they are, and all they can do is take the piss out of it. But, you know, you have to sort of see by that.
There's the brilliant, I don't know if you're aware of it, but when the Time Flies DVD came out with all the Oasis single videos on it, and Noel did a commentary track, and he basically, you're aware of that, yeah?
Yeah, I saw it. He put everything, fucking hell. I mean, and a lot of that is really an image with him. I just think he feels like he's got to be like that, and he's not really like that. That's the funny thing about it. Because if they hate the videos as much as they would, I wouldn't have done another one or skips for them. Do you know what I'm saying? It just wouldn't have worked that way.
Spent all day walking across there. Yeah, could you just do that again? I mean, walking in videos is... somebody sussed out there, haven't they? At some point, like 10 years into it. All they're prepared to do is walk. They'll walk and play. They can walk and play at the same time. But walking and playing is basically what they're doing. And standing still and looking bored. Thank God that's over. What was the next one off this? Oh, fucking hell.
In the post-production on Supersonic, especially watching it back-to-back with the UK one, and the UK one has got a bit of post-production. It's, you know, got some quick cuts and some, you know, interesting sort of cutaway shots and things like that. But then you get to this, your version, and it is absolutely like... bam, 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 bam. We've got fisheye lenses. We've got, you know, filters. We've got saturated colours. You're creating so much energy all the time. And I wondered if that was partly because the band are quite static. And so you were like, look, I'm not going to get performance energy like you might get from a Hutchins or Kylie Minogue or someone. They're going to give you a performance. Did you almost have to create that energy through your editing?
Well, that's a good question. And actually, that... that is more relevant to the next video, because when I went into the Superstar, I didn't really know what they were going to be like performing like. I mean, I didn't get to see them, so I'd never seen them play, and I saw that video, and that video was, I suppose the word is, it seemed a bit pretentious, because not that mine wouldn't be considered pretentious, because, you know, I'm trying to do this idea of aliens coming out of space, but, you know, we are, in America, you're referred to as an alien if you're not from there, so they refer to you as aliens anyway, so that idea of being an alien, and that David Bowie was, and looking at them in America, it was like a fish out of water. It was literally, they could have had, like, those gigantic eyes and were green, because that's the way people look at them, so theoretically, I thought it was a really, really good idea to portray them as that. And they went on to live up to that, too, because, you know, them and Happy Mondays, you know, I think Happy Mondays were even more extreme. But I think people in America thought it was all an act, and it wasn't an act. It was all real. What they were like was absolutely real. And I think that, but with Supersonic, that was my style. I used fisheye lenses, I used a lot of skills, I did, and in Supersonic I did the intro, which was from the Apollo. I got the lab footage of the Apollo spaceship, because I wanted to, you know, I was trying to put the idea that these people just landed on this planet in this country. And but it had enough rock and roll in it, had enough guitar and enough band performance in it to make it seem like it's a band, because that's the problem about the Supersonic video from UK. You couldn't tell who they were as a band at all. It was so kind of fragmented, and I did want them to come across as, this is a cool band. They're the classic guitar, bass, drums, singer lineup. You know, Noel with Liam with his tambourine. I love that. I put that so he could put the tambourine over the camera.
Yeah,
so,
great shot. Yeah,
all those things were thought out. You know, and I got them to set up, because I knew that really all they wanted to do was play. And again, the next video for Live Forever, that all came, everything came into play in that video, you know, from what you're saying. So, you know, basically, that video, Live Forever, came soon after, because, you know, Supersonic did well in this country. But, you know, worked reasonably well. It wasn't a hit, but it certainly got on what they call the buzz slip here. So they've got the buzz slip, which is like what Nirvana have been on, with Smells Like Teen Spirit. So they were beginning to be put into that arena because of that video, right? Anyway, I shot it all on Super 8 as well, because it was relatively cheap. It was about $80,000, which now is a lot of money, but then it was considered not much money. So I shot it on Super 8 because I wanted it to be as real as possible in terms of, if you had a 35mm camera and a 16mm camera, you have to keep setting up and putting things up. With a Super 8 camera, you can hold it in your hand.
Got you.
And so I kept it loose, because I knew that I'd need to keep them engaged with it. If there's a lot of waiting around, I knew they weren't going to, I knew that they were going to start drifting off. And so I needed to keep it. So I did it on, on a Super 8. And the funny thing was, the next day I went on a helicopter to shoot some stuff over the dinosaurs and everything like that, and it was we were on it, and the PA that was with us, he's from Ladbroke Grove, a guy called Giles, he had a t-shirt on that said, "Nobody knows I'm a lesbian," and the guy that ran the helicopter service had a t-shirt on with Bill Clinton, who was the president at the time, holding the Statue of Liberty with a gun to its head. So he knew that there were these two worlds collide. I mean, and this guy was an ex-Vietnam, and he put us in this helicopter. It was like a lawnmower. I mean, it literally could barely get off the ground, and it was so narrow, and there was three of us in this helicopter, and there was no doors on it. And every time the guy banked to one side, my cameraman started to fall out of the door. And so that was one of the most terrifying experiences I ever had. Funny to look back on it now, because the thing was literally going, it was storming all the time. So it was one of the, and then the guy, when I was in the helicopter, the guy said, "Whatever you do, don't put your feet on those pedals." And my feet were right next to the pedals. So it was terrifying, but we got that shot, those aerial shots. It was just a tourist helicopter. We couldn't afford to use a proper film helicopter service.
That's amazing.
But anyway, soon after that, I got a call to do the next one. But this time, I got a call from the president of Epic himself. He's an English guy. I can't remember his name is now. And said to me, "You need to guarantee me this is going to be a hit on MTV." And I said, I can't do that. I said, how can I guarantee you? I said, I don't know. So, and that one is one of my favourites, because I think that it really brought... So when I listened to the song and I saw that this idea of Live Forever, and I thought about all the... And not knowing how much Noel is a big music fan and football fan, you know, I thought, well, here's a perfect thing to show all these people who are not here anymore, but they live forever because of their art, and they're always going to be in the consciousness. So as well, like Jimi Hendrix, Brian Jones, Sid Vicious, Bobby Moore, the England captain, they're all, and I knew that was going to play into Noel. And And that was taken from another Nicholas Rogue film called Performance, with Mick Jagger in it.
Got you.
And there's a scene in that where Mick Jagger's a rock star from the 70s, is all fucked up with mushrooms and everything like that, and James Fox plays a gangster, like a Kray Twins gangster, that goes, he's hiding, and he goes to this house where Mick Jagger lives in, and kind of, because he knows if he blends in, no one's going to think he's in this place. But there's a scene where they're sitting in this... Harry, his office, and on the walls are all racehorses, pictures of racehorses. So I just decided, okay, let's get Liam doing the Harry bit. We're sitting in a room, and like the firm, they're like the firm, you know, they're sitting around, they're having a brandy, and Harry's kind of running the roof, and it's this office with Chesterfield couches. So I wanted to reproduce that, because I wanted to take Liam, I mean, out of just the standing on stage performance thing. I want to take him out of that. And have him sitting in his chair, and all around the band are sitting. They're drinking their brandies and whatever in these comfortable couches, and on the back of this wall are all these iconic, like Kurt Cobain and Sid and we couldn't use Elvis, but they're all up on there, and I want to sort of animate this, bring them a little bit to life and go, you know what? Thank God for music, because of music, these people live forever. I was actually very proud of that concept, because I thought it worked. It was subtle, but it worked really well.
Yeah.
So this time they sent someone from Epic Records down to the shoot. Right. Because there's more money involved at this point. So they sent someone down to the shoot in London, and we shot it at the former Swedish embassy or Danish embassy off of Portland Place. It was empty at that point. So we got into one of these buildings, which was great, and we set up a performance. We set up the performance side of it, because again, I wanted to keep the band in performance, but I put it in context of the building, like this thing was taking place in the whole building. And the records label guy came down, a guy called Scott Spanjic, who worked at Epic Records, and he was head of music video marketing or something. So he came down. We did a performance first. We figured, let's get the band comfortable, let's get them doing performances, that's what they like doing. So we set up a performance, and we did take. And this guy, Scott Spanjic, came to me and he goes, you need to go up to Liam and tell him that he's got to move around a little bit more, because, you know, he's just standing there. And I said to him, I said, you know what? You can do that. I said, I'm not going to go up until the guy start jumping around. I've never seen him ever jump around, right? And so I think Scott Spanjic went up to there, and all I hear was, fuck off. So I was glad that I didn't actually go and broach that subject to Liam. But what was genius, and I have to give my editor absolute fucking credit for what he did, he made a purpose of cutting to Liam when he wasn't singing. And I think that's what makes the video. So you've got Liam with this icy stare, with no lips moving, to the music. And to this day, I think that was an absolute stroke of genius for an edit. Because instead of hiding it and trying to cut it, we go, this is who he is. You know,
yeah.
He is like that. That's what makes him great, because that's his thing. He doesn't move. He barely moves a finger when he's performing. I think from what I've seen recently, he's loosened up a little bit more. I think he moves around a little bit more and he does his tambourine a little bit more. But then he didn't do anything.
Mm.
I mean, not a thing. And when we were shooting, him sitting in the chair, he hated doing that. He hated so much. He walked off the set eventually. And that's the last shot you see in the video. He goes, fuck it, I've had enough of this. I'm not a fucking actor. And he got up and he walked off and he walked out the door. And that was it. He was done. And the rest of the band said to me, oh, don't worry about him, he's a fucking baby. I mean, there's a certain amount they couldn't tolerate of Liam either. It's just like, and Noel in particular, but you always have to be very cautious, never get involved with sibling rivalry.
Mm.
But Noel would be the one that really would lay into him about it. But so if you look at the video, the very last shot, you'll see him standing up. And he walks off the set, and he literally walked off the set and out the door and got in a taxi and left.
That is brilliant.
So I used that in the video. That video was put them through the roof in this country, because not only did it get the buzz, but you got the clip of the week on MTV, which was like people literally paid to try and pay to get clip of the week, and they got clip of the week on it and went to high rotation. And that video was the thing that sort of broke them. That song and that video was the thing that really sort of, if you can say they broke in America, so I don't think they ever really got as big as they could have been, but. Brooke was the first step to breaking them in the States, and I was very proud of that video, and it's a fucking brilliant song. I mean, on top of all, Supersonic and Live Forever are just an epic song. I mean, they're absolute classic. So of course the song had a lot to do with it. It was a great song. You can't do a great video to a crap song. It just doesn't work.
Mm.
And so you can do, you can have a, it's very rare you get a great song and a great video together, and that was one of the times when we really did get the two that worked together, and it worked really, really well. And by this point, I'd started to build up. At this point, I was become not friends. I didn't become friends with Oasis like I did with INXS or with Duran Duran, because they're very sort of guarded and off, and I said they've almost got this northern chip on their shoulders a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like, everyone's a twat, everyone's a cockney, everyone's a this and that and the other, which is kind of funny up to a point, but then it's kind of like there's a negativity to it. It's like, you go, I know why you've got such a, why are you so angry towards people all the time, or so sarcastic, but I got it because I was English, and they weren't necessarily like that to me, but they were very, didn't want to communicate with people. Really, and had no interest, which is one of the reasons I like them actually. They had no interest in stylists and they had no interest in makeup artists. They didn't want to see them. If anyone came up, they told them to fuck off. so they were difficult sometimes, but it never affected me. Although when I was doing that particular video, I was going through a tough time in my life. I'd been really sick. I mean, I was literally got off the plane from LA, and I was in bed for 2 days, but I put a shoot back, so I was so sick. And then I went through a breakup when I was in the middle of doing the edit, and I ended up spending days in bed trying to get over that. And I had a great team around me, and Nicholas Wyman Harris, who was the editor on that, he was a great editor, but that was just that edit made the video. And the fact that he did, like I said, cuts, and the best parts are when Noel is just staring in the camera and not doing anything.
Mm.
Because you're so engaged by him, you're so brought in by him, and you're so brought into his charisma. So that was a that was a tough point for emotionally period in my life. But at the same time, when you go through those periods, you end up sometimes doing your best stuff, and that has to be one of my top five videos I've ever done. That one.
Oh, yeah. That's fantastic.
All my videos I've done for the races are pretty good.
Yeah.
So anything you want to know about that?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, I suppose with that shot of Liam, it's great that you've got him with no shades on here. You know, it's so hard to, he's often in shades, and it's such a shame when you're thinking purely just on a visual basis. He's got the most incredible eyes in the world, you know.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking at it, you know, why would you not want these incredible blue eyes? And so both of the two videos we've discussed have got these elements where there's like a blue colouring and a blue sheen to it, and it really does bring out the blue in his eyes, and it's such an incredible image in that Live Forever, especially the way it's shot, the way it's lit is fantastic with those hanging lamps, and then he swings the lamp and you've got the flashing lights around. Yeah. It's just beautifully lit.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I appreciate you saying that. And I feel that sometimes, as a filmmaker or a music video or any kind of artist, there are only a few times you can count, probably on one hand, where you just hit everything perfectly, like the perfect storm, and that was one of them. Everything seemed to work in that. Negatives worked. I mean, the fact that the record label wanted him to jump around and then he didn't, and then we made a point of that in the video. I sit here and Josh was like, fuck that guy for telling an artist, like, leave that to Damon Albarn, he'll jump around. but this is Liam. And it's like, so we almost did it as a fuck you to the record label by cutting to him and saying, this is who Liam is, get used to it. Do you know what I mean? Because they were big in England at this point, but they still weren't very big in America. By the time we get to the next videos, we've gone through the stratosphere big. But at this point, they still were relatively at that point in England, it wasn't like overground at that point. It wasn't like they weren't a household name. They were big in a certain world. It was later they got to that part, but this particular part, they were still big. But in America, they were still an unknown quantity. And that video, like I said, established that. And everything went right. But again, I have to give Nicholas Rowe credit for that, because it was totally a gain from performance. You know, his film with Mick Jagger. And again, if you look at it, the movie, you'll see even the bit where he pushes the light just to get him. To push that light was almost impossible to do it. I mean, he didn't want to do it. He refused. I had to say to him, listen, I know you hate doing it. And I said, and I get why, but just do it. And if you hate it in the edit, I won't use it. I promise you that. I won't use it. I said, but just for me. And he did it. And he did it. And you can even see in his face when he's pushing it, he's not into doing it at all.
Yeah.
Because I said, the reason is because I want to light the other guys in the band up, so when the light swings around, it looks like it's hitting them, and he did it for me, and I have to get, and I said thanks to him, listen, I really appreciate it, and I mean what I say. If you hate it in the edit, we won't use it. And I think he trusted me on that, and obviously when he saw it, he thought it was okay, but he's very self-conscious, really. You wouldn't imagine that, but he is very self-conscious. I think he's very subconscious about his credibility and what he's decided who he is, and anything outside of that he's not comfortable with. But I've seen him get more comfortable from what I've seen more in recent times. But then it was like, well, this rock star thing is a whole new thing, you know.
Mm.
And you know, there was some suggestion at one point Liam was going to wear, was going to wear some leather trousers, and they took the piss out of him so much in the band. Like, no, fucking. So that's what it's like. It's like you saying anything wrong, and you're going to get fucking like nailed. And I tell you, the person that was really important to me in all of this, more than anybody else really, was the manager, Marcus, their manager.
Yeah.
He really was brilliant. And brilliant, and he's supportive, and he was supportive of me, and he was the one that really always pushed me to do videos. And you know, I was meant to do,
Wonderwall.
And I wanted to do that. So they came to me to do that. And I really wanted to do it, but they wouldn't go up on the budget, so Propaganda wouldn't let me do it. And I just said, you know what, if ever I wanted to do a video, it was Wonderwall, because I love that song. And Nigel Dick got that, because I couldn't do it. And I was really disappointed. I was disappointed with Propaganda, but I said, you know what, didn't matter if we made a profit on that. To me, that was an important video to have done, and I always was pissed off about it when I saw the video that I didn't get to do it. So I didn't get that, but they wanted me. I was their first choice, because I'd just done two videos back-to-back with her, you know. So I know that, and I like Nigel. I think Nigel's a good guy, and I'm happy that he did get to do it and did do some of those Ocean videos too. But if any video I wanted to do, it would have been Wonderwall.
Today is gonna be the day that they're gonna throw it back to you. By now you should have somehow realized what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
Just going back to Live Forever, was it your choice to have Hendrix and Sid Vicious and Bobby Moore? Was that you, or did there any back and forth with the band about who to have in those images?
No, because you know what, really, I'll tell you one thing, James, they really didn't get that involved in it. If there's something they didn't like, that you would know about it, right? And I knew how much Noel loved Kurt Cobain, and I just knew that that's why I put Bobby Moore in there, because I thought Bobby Moore is the only Englishman to catch an England team to the World Cup, and he just died not long before that. And I knew that would hit I knew it hit with Noel. I knew Noel would go, fuck, that's great. And so all those people, I think he might have made a suggestion. I think he might have made a suggestion once he saw the treatment. He might have come up with Jim Morrison or something. But I basically went for all the iconic rock stars. I didn't put Janis Joplin in there, but I went for all the iconic rock stars. And Sid Vicious being a really important one, Kurt Cobain, Brian Jones. But I knew culturally that he would totally get that. So, no, they had very little to do with any of the concepts, you know. Like I say, if they didn't like something, you would know about it. So if you didn't hear from them, you knew everything was pretty cool. And actually, on the shoot day, a lot of bands, when you show up and shoot, they can be a pain in the neck. They want this, they want that, they want to do this. Can they change that? Can they do the different backdrop? Oceans were never like that. They would show up professional. They would drink a little bit too much sometimes, but they would get on the set and they would pretty much go get into it. They might take the piss out of something, you know, like something hanging on the wall, something, but not to the point where it became a pain in the neck.
I always thought it was interesting the choice of Kurt Cobain in there, actually, because you know, you've got all these like classic rock stars, and then Cobain's in there, and they were certain, this can't have been much later than when he died, so it was pretty fresh, I suppose, and it was and he was so, because they were like the antithesis of Kurt Cobain, and yet And yet he's in there, and I always thought that was it was a lovely tribute actually to have him in there as like the latest.
No one always said to me that he thought that Kurt Cobain was the sort of American punk, and I don't know, and I think I don't know what he ever said in public about Nirvana, but certainly I knew that Noel admired him, and also I didn't want it to be a link just to the 70s.
Yeah.
I thought this was if there was a message in it, it was also, this is something that happened because you're right, because when I was doing this video up in Portland, up in Seattle, when the first time I even heard about Oasis was when Kurt Cobain died, so he died right between me doing that Candlebox video and then doing the Supersonic video. So, I think I've read in the past about, I was talking about Kurt Cobain and Oasis, and Nirvana. I think that tragedy must have been fresh in my mind of thinking at the time, because to me, Nirvana were the closest thing to punk that I experienced in America. And Kurt Cobain was not like Oasis. He was he didn't want to conform. He did whatever he wanted to do. He didn't, and I thought there was another element of that probably might have even inspired me to come up with the idea of doing that, what I did for A Live Forever.
Oh, that's cool.
Can't honestly remember.
And I just I don't know if you, I assume you know, but that later on the Nebworth performance of Live Forever, they then have at the end, they have images of Bob Marley and Kurt Cobain and John Lennon and stuff up on the big screen at the end. And so, you didn't know that?
No.
No.
Well, again, that's right.
Yeah, so yeah, at Nebworth, and Liam didn't even know that they were doing it. So you see Liam at Nebworth, and I was there at Nebworth, and Liam like turns around and sits and looks at the screen. And so, yeah, all the images of different people flash up, and it ends with John Lennon. And
I knew how much they loved the thing, but yeah, I actually never thought of Bob Marley. That was a mistake, I guess. But I can quite honestly say that that was my idea to use them in that respect. And I think a lot of people respected them for acknowledging that, because they were always accused of being a Beatles ripoff. And but to actually then put John Lennon in the clip, it's saying, yeah, we are, he's our hero. So fucking what,
Yeah.
So I think that kind of like lifted off the bogey off their back a little bit about this whole plagiarism and how they rip everything off. Because I never thought about them as being like that. I think Noel is one of the most talented songwriters of all time. Actually, I think he's a master of writing songs. And yes, you can hear the influence in them. But who gives a shit about that? I think that's great.
Brilliant.
And he's like me. I think he even said that. Okay, here's a great quote from Noel when I was working. Two things. First of all, he's like, he saw in me that I was okay about also using and not being afraid to say, this comes from a Nicholas Rogue film. I've taken this from performance. And he was the same as that. He was like, oh yeah, I took this bit from the Beatles so-and-so. And I think that's one of the reasons we worked well creatively. But once we were shooting Supersonic, and we're up in this quarry, and I fell down this fucking quarry, got stuck in. And now it comes up to me and goes, you know what? He goes, the funny thing about you is, he goes, you look like you don't know what the fuck you're doing. He goes, but that's the thing about it. You do, don't you? You know exactly what you're doing. He goes, I like that. He says, I like that. And I thought that was a sort of funny, backhanded comment. He goes, you look like you don't know what the fuck you're doing. but yeah, so, 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 so And then I guess we're on to Standing on the Shoulders of Giants, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting then. I mean, you mentioned...
Well, it is an interesting story about that, because I was asked by Marcus if I could fly to New York and meet the band, because they were mastering a record in New York somewhere, right? And I went to this meeting, and this was not long after Michael Hutchins had died. And you know, Michael was a good friend of mine. And it wasn't long after, you know, they put Michael down on the Brit Award, or the Brits or something, right? The Brit Awards, and said he was has-been, right? So one of the things that touched me, and I always thought, when I went into the studio, the first thing that happened was Liam came up to me, and he goes, I didn't realise you were a mate of Michael Hutchins. He goes, I saw, because I was on some documentary that was made, and he saw it, and he saw me on it, and he says, I feel so bad about that. He goes, of course, because he was your mate. And I was quite honestly touched by that, because people hate him on the NXS side for what they did to Michael, because I know how much it devastated Michael. It really, really devastated him, because he loved them. And then but again, I even said to Michael at the time, that's who they are, Michael. They feel like they need to slag everyone off.
Yeah.
Don't need to be personally. And so when Liam came up to me, and I've never seen him actually be so genuine, and so, like, I feel really bad about that, man. He goes, I saw you on that show, and he goes, I didn't realise he was your mate. And I thought, I was quite touched by that gesture, that he went out of his way to say that he was sorry, basically, to me. So that was a nice touch. And that's when, basically, they offered me all the videos off that record.
Yeah,
great.
It's interesting that. So, I mean, you've kind of filled in the gaps a little bit, that they did sort of talk to you about doing Wonderwall. But yeah, there is then this big gap, basically, then to Standing on the Shoulder of Giants. So was there any other discussion about being involved with them?
I think 94 is when I did Forever. And so there's a big gap, because in 1999, I guess, I came and did. So that's like, 5 years?
Yeah.
And so I basically flew to New York, hung out with them in the studio. I had a laugh with them, actually, because it was the first time I got a chance just to hang out with them and not be working. And they were working a bit, but we had a bit of a laugh. We were talking about football, and I realised that, yeah, obviously they must have liked the videos I did, because they came back and they didn't just say to me, we want you to do this video. We want you to do all the videos off this album. I did four from that record. Was it four yet?
Yeah.
And I don't know if they did any other videos. I probably did a couple after that. But I thought, well, that was great. Because at this point, they were probably one of the biggest bands in the world.
Try to click with what you got. Taste every potion, 'cause if you like yourself a lot, go let it out. Go let it in. And go let it out. Life is precocious in the most peculiar way.
And we are going to put a pin in it there. That was absolutely fantastic. I hope you enjoyed that. There's another, probably an hour's worth again. So we are going to come back next time and do the second hour, all about the videos from the Standing on the Shoulder of Giants album. So that's Go Let It Out, Who Feels Love, Sunday Morning Call, and Where Did It All Go Wrong. Really interesting stuff still to come from Nick. But yeah, we're going to pause it there for now. So do make sure you come back for the next episode to hear the rest of that. As promised at the start, we've got a competition this week for Columbia pins. So the way that you can be in with a chance to win a complete set of the Columbia pins pin badges is this. One of the really cool things about Columbia pins is that they're always looking for new ideas of great pin badges from iconic images from the history of Oasis. Now, one of the things we could do is a pin badge based on one of the videos. So what I want you to do is make sure you're following at Columbia Pins on Twitter, and I want you to tweet at them with your idea for a great pin badge from an Oasis video. So it can be the iconic white suit from the All Around the World video, or it could be Liam sitting on the chair on the Live Forever video against the wall, or over to you. I'd be really interested to hear what you say. Do make sure you tweet that at Columbia Pins, and you will be in for a chance of winning the entire Columbia Pins pin badge set. And remember, if you go to columbiapins.bigcartel.com and buy yourself a pin badge or a set of pin badges, you will get 20% off with the code OASISPOD. So make sure you're using that. And and thank you very much to Columbia Pins for sponsoring this episode. Plus, just picking up on last episode, thank you very much to everyone who entered the competition to win a print from Your Team's Prints. We're going to be doing a draw for that on Wednesday the 25th of November. So you have got a few more days now if you're hearing this sort of when it's just come out. Wednesday the 25th of November is going to be the closing date for that. So yeah, if you want to be in for a chance of winning a print, then you need to go to at Your Team's Prints and you need to tweet at them with this code word, which is scissors, and then you will be in for a chance of winning a A3 print of your choice. So much winning here on the Oasis podcast. All right, that will do it for today. I want to thank our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is, and it's greatly appreciated. As I mentioned earlier, there is now the Oasis Podcast Network Discord. And the reason it's Oasis Podcast Network is it also relates to the 1001 Albums podcast I do and the Trainspotting Minute podcast, which is going to be coming up very soon. I just recorded the first episode of that with Richard Bowes the other day. So, really looking forward to doing more on that in the coming weeks and months. Do please make sure you're following on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast, or it's Oasis Pod on Instagram. Do please review the podcast if you can on iTunes or the podcatcher that you use. And you can always email me, oasispod@gmail.com. It's great to hear from you. Some really cool emails this week from people who are fans of the podcast or have got suggestions for guests and things like that. Always really appreciate it. Absolutely fantastic. All right. Thanks again to Columbia Pins for sponsoring this episode. And until next time, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
Thank God that's over. What was the next one off this? Oh, fucking hell. Oh, fucking hell.